Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation In the Huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about, similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the beyond nicotine experience with its beyond tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, beyond tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.
Broadcasting live from the Raiders practice facility at the Intermountain Healthcare Performance Center. This is the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
I'm over that, so my body's feeling pretty good.
There's a growing narrative outside the building that you need more touches, you need more looks, you need more targets. That's the problem with the offense. I mean, have you felt that? Is that something that you guys have been talking about?
I mean, it is a little different, you know, because over the past couple of years, you know, I am used to a lot more volume, but you know, I guess there's a lot more things in play this year. There's a lot more guys that can do stuff with the rock. There's a lot of different ways and situations where there's a lot of bodies around me. And there aren't as many opportunities where it frees up where, you know, I am getting a good look, I guess. So, and sometimes when those happens, you know, Derek may get pressured. Things may happen. So I don't think me getting more targets is the answer to everything. And nor do I think that that does something special for our offense. I do feel like when I get my hands on the ball, it's a great thing. And I do want to be able to make plays for this team. But you know, there's so many things that I can't control when I approach the game, and if I try to focus on those things, you know, I can get frustrated like anybody else can, but, you know, I just try to focus on, you know, running every route like I am going to get the ball and never letting that mindset change, and that keeps me encouraged throughout the game.
That was Raiders tight end Darren Waller speaking today, just a little while ago, actually, at the Raiders practice facility here in Henderson. That's exactly where I am. And Darren Waller was talking about some of the frustrations of the type of coverages that he's getting right now, as opposed to when he first kind of showed up on the scene in 2019 and a lot of single coverage looks, which he really excels at to this day. He's the best at it in the NFL. There's been 60 instances where Darren Waller faced single man coverage. He won the battle in terms of getting open 40 times in those situations. That's the best in the NFL. He just doesn't see those looks very often. To put it in perspective, Keenan Allen from the LA Chargers has been single covered 140 times this year. So you do the math. Darren Waller is getting that look 60 times. He's destroying it, getting open 40 times. By the way, you're in the huddle. Vinny Bonsignor, Lincoln Kennedy. Brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 9:20 a.m. on a Thursday. Lincoln will not be with us today, so he will be back with us next week on a short week, by the way, with Thanksgiving coming up and the Raiders going to Dallas to play the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day. I'm really looking forward to that game. But when you look at Darren Waller's numbers, and this is coming up right now, it wasn't a big issue earlier in the season when the Raiders were winning football games more consistently. It certainly wasn't coming up when the Raiders beat the Philadelphia Eagles. He wasn't even on the field against the Philadelphia Eagles. And a week before that, beat the Denver Broncos when they were playing, as we've talked about, really their best football of the season, those two games. And since I started covering the Raiders, it was the best football I've seen them play in the 2 years I've been covering this team, the two games prior to this two-game skid. So it wasn't a big deal earlier in the season in terms of how many touches or targets is he getting, which is relatively the same average-wise. He's averaging, I think, about 8.3 or 8.9 targets this year through eight games, which is on pace for what he normally gets and certainly what he got last year. However, there's a couple of issues. One, if you take out the 18 targets that he had in game one, which was too much. We all, even he admitted that that's a little too much. But if you take that total out, since then, In the seven games that he's played since, I want to say that it's down to 7.3 touches or targets per game, which is about two less than what he was getting last year, the nine targets that he was getting last year. And on top of that, you know, if you look at Darren Waller's numbers this year, 71 targets through eight games. That includes the 18 in game one, of course, you have to. 44 catches for 494 yards. Last year, 145 targets. That's obviously through 16 games. He's only played eight games so far this year. 107 catches, 1,196 yards. So at the halfway point this year, he's not on target to do what he did last year. 44 catches over the first eight games. If that's what he averages the rest of the way, that's 88 catches. He had 107 last year in 16 games. 494 yards, that would put him right around 1,000, which is about 200. It'll be about 200 less than what he got last year in a similar amount of games. If he keeps on his current pace, is what I'm saying. So, you know, there's a lot of factors that play into this. Number one, prior to the Henry Ruggs situation, the Raiders were getting nice production from Henry Ruggs, from Bryan Edwards, from Hunter Renfro, who continues to be, you know, he just gets better all the time. So it wasn't as if they were missing out by not maybe tapping into Darren Waller as much as they have in the past. They just had more weapons, really. Complete. It was a more complete group of receivers. And you throw in Foster Moreau as well. So it was balanced. It was a little bit more balanced. And we talked about this last year during the offseason in terms of maybe it would be better off for the Raiders if those targets come down a little bit, the 145 that he had last year, in order to accommodate more players. You know, you figured coming into the season, Henry Ruggs was going to get better. You figured Bryan Edwards in his second year was going to get better. So it behooved the Raiders to spread it out a little bit more. It just helps everybody, including Darren Waller, because eventually from game to game, that might also mean him getting more of those single coverage looks that he really excels at. The other issue is, in addition to just having better teammates around him this year, I think compared to last year collectively, it's also a fact that he's just getting defended differently this year. There's more focus on Darren Waller, and rightfully so. He's one of the most dangerous weapons in the NFL. And so other teams are going to say, well, we have to do something about that. We can't just let him run free. We have to change it up on him. We have to do what we think is going to slow him down a little bit. And it obviously appears to be working. Talking to Darren Waller today, it's like, when I line up wide, I've got a guy to my outside, I've got a guy to the inside, and there's always a third guy sort of lurking when he's lined up out wide. So the challenge for him is, okay, and you know, not all three guys are defending him, but they're all aware of him. So if he turns left, there's a guy that's going to that's going to help deal with him. To the right, if he drives forward, there's three guys always sort of lurking. And the challenge for him, as he talked about today, is, okay, how do you attack that better? Do you figure out different ways to line up, different places on the field to line up? Do you maybe incorporate more routes into your arsenal so you have a few more things, a few more ways to attack that coverage? Do you play one guy off the other? Do you drive at this guy to try to create room, you know, from the other guy? There's a lot of what he talked about, intricacies to this position and to attacking defenses, that for a younger player and let's face it, you know, really Darren Waller is in his third year when you really think about it. When you think about where he was prior to coming to the Raiders. He's on the Baltimore Ravens practice squad. We all know the story. It's inspiring in a lot of ways. But just prior to that, you know, he was dealing with some demons. And so he wasn't really even a factor in the NFL at all. He comes to the Raiders, and in 2019, he just explodes onto the scene and backs that up with a tremendous year last year. But in a lot of ways, from a football player standpoint, he's still learning. You know, this is still somewhat new to him, especially the attention that he's getting. He told us, man, it would be great if we could go back to 2019 when nobody knew who the heck Darren Waller was necessarily. And so what are we going to pay extra attention to this unknown commodity when there's other players to defend? And so he had a lot more room to operate in 2019 compared to what he does now. And it's just different. It's not like, you know, you're literally putting two guys right there up on him. No, the NFL is so intricate and so next level that there's things that defenses are doing that you think you know what they're doing, but they're trying to disguise what they're actually doing. You know, I remember talking to a young quarterback in the NFL, it might have been Jared Goff, but he said the difference between college and the NFL, when you line up and you look across the line of scrimmage, and if they're in cover two, the other team, the defense, they're playing cover two. In the NFL, they may line up in cover two, but they're liable to be evolving into a whole other different look as the play unfolds after the snap. So you think you're facing one defense when in reality you're facing another. It's a lot different at the NFL level compared to the college level. They're just so smarter, so much more intricate, and trying to confuse you and trying to disguise what they're really doing when in reality they're doing something else. So, you know, when Darren Waller lines up on the outside and sees three players in or around him, and when he starts working in the middle of the field and he feels the presence of three players, they may not be defending him individually themselves, but they're there for a reason because they know that that ball could be going to him. So they're there to either bat it away or just tackle him and make sure that the yards after catch, which he's a killer at, are minimized. It's not just catches at this level. You know, guys are going to catch the ball. Where Darren Waller and guys like Travis Kelce, the Raiders saw this firsthand on Sunday, it's not just them catching the ball. It's what they do after the catch. And guys like Travis Kelce and Darren Waller can shred you after the catch with the ball in their hands. And when you all you had to do is look at his numbers and realize that that's not necessarily happening as much as it was in the past. So the challenge becomes, you know, how do the Raiders try to uncork that a little bit more? Now more than ever. You know, we've talked about this in terms of the loss of Henry Ruggs and what it's really meant in the whole scheme of things of the Raiders offense. You don't like to harp on it. I mean, but forget the circumstances, as tragic as they were, and we all recognize that. You know, just think of it as they lost one of their best players, offensive players, effective and impactful players, to a knee injury or something like that. You know, you remove a player of that caliber and you're going to feel it. You know, there's only so many guys that could do what he does.
Yeah, Vinny, but to be honest, I'm looking at his stats now. He had his best game since the opener was against the Giants. So I don't think
it was. Context, but last week was, yes, it was. Yes,
context is important to everything, and I see what you're saying, but I think sometimes players just got to go out there and make plays.
It's true, and they missed a big one too on a touchdown catch. I'd like to see what the defense was. I have to go back to look to see what the defensive look was, because we do know that he's got 60 chances in single coverage, and he's gotten free 40 times against those 60. It's the best in the NFL. Some of those might have happened in that Giants game. But I did, and you know, I did ask Darren, is this something that you're seeing throughout the season or just recently? And it's been throughout the season. Everybody has their way of stopping Darren Waller. And no doubt that Giants game was a nice game for him. Should have been better. And, you know, Derek Carr missed a wide open Darren Waller in the end zone. That changes things. That might have won the game for him. It might have been a different game, you know, as a result of that. But I think collectively, when you look at the numbers, there's something, you know, it's he's not on target to do what he normally does. And part of it is how many catches he's you know, he's dropped a few too. And he'll be the first to admit that in that, forget what game we're talking about. I think it was the Bears game. Everyone had drops in that game, including Darren. And if you look at his drop grade by, you know, PFF, it's down. It's a little bit down. I mean, he's, by according to Pro Football Focus, I want to say he's the 23rd ranked tight end in the NFL or right around there. So whether it's how he's being used, how he's being defended, what he's doing individually, to your point, you know, you got to make plays. As an athlete, you have to make plays. But also, you know, it's on Carr too. You know, if you're open in those, and Darren talked about this, like, you know, there's times where, all right, I'm seeing the cloud look, I'm seeing the three guys, you know, I'll do the best I can, run my route, hopefully I'm open, hopefully the ball's coming my way. Understandable if it doesn't. But then you, the real frustrating ones are when he does get that look that he wants, the favorable look, and wins that battle, but he only has so much control at that point. And like he said, maybe I win that battle, but Derek Carr's getting pressured, or something else happened, or he goes a different direction with the ball. There's other factors that come into play above and beyond whether or not Darren Waller won that rep. So, you know, that's where the quarterback comes in and all that. And sometimes, as we saw in New York, the quarterback's not going to make a good throw. That was a prime chance for the Raiders to capitalize on a defensive look that Darren Waller excels at. So, and I think it's more pronounced, Damon, because they have lost these two games. And, yeah, the Giants game was a nice game for him, but it was a sluggish game for the offense. And certainly last week against the Kansas City Chiefs, it was a sluggish offensive game again. And everyone's trying to figure out, okay, why is that? And without Henry, do you need to go even more to Darren Waller? I read someplace where, hey, if you're not targeting him 10-plus times a game at this point, the defense might be celebrating because he's that good of a player. But I don't know. It sounds easy. Well, just get him, you know, give, you know, throw him the ball a couple more times. But if you're Derek Carr and you're not getting the look that you want, it doesn't make any sense just to force it just because you feel like you got to get it to 83. That has a bad effect as well, potentially. That was what was going on in the Baltimore Ravens game. Remember the 18 targets that he got? 19? It might have been 19.
It was 19.
Yeah, it was 19 targets. You know, and even Darren saying, look, I know it was my birthday, and I know it's the Baltimore Ravens, a team I played for, but this is probably going a little overboard in this case, too. So you have to find that happy balance. But, you know, I tend to agree that, especially with this offense kind of struggling right now, and a lot of the struggles, and we've talked about this, too, are just silly mistakes. You know, when you jump off sides or when there's an illegal procedure call on a third and one, you've eliminated the opportunity for at least three more plays, at least three more chances to do some damage. And so you got to back up and you got to punt it. And it's all about plays. That's what coaches talk about so often now. Games come down to how many opportunities do you have to score points? And the Raiders against the Kansas City Chiefs, what was it, 21 plays in the first half? Why? It wasn't necessarily just because the Kansas City Chiefs defense was that good and they were stopping them and getting them off the field on third down. It was the Raiders having a makeable fourth and one, jumping off sides and creating a fourth and six. It was Brandon Parker moving on a third and three and backing it up to make it a less advantageous third and eight. So those are issues that the Raiders, you know, have to clean up. We talked to Josh Jacobs about that today. Always love talking to Josh. He always brings an enlightenment and a really refreshing intellect to all of this. And, you know, talking about how frustrating it is that so much of what's happened with the Raiders these last two games has been self-inflicted, but also the hopefulness that creates when you're sitting there watching film and understanding, you know, it's not because that team was like that much better than us, or even in the Giants' case, better than the Raiders. And the Raiders are sitting there watching film going, you know, if we just take care of business, we should win this game right here. Should have won that game. And at the very least, you would rather be in that situation, obviously, than just getting your hats handed to you in a way that suggests you don't even belong on the same field with that crew. You're just not that good. You're not good enough to compete with that team that you just played. And as frustrating as it is to lose because you're shooting yourself in the foot, that's a better feeling because you understand if you just eliminate the silliness and the carelessness, you're going to be in a good position to win those games. They all count at the end of the year one way or another. It's either a win or a loss. But with eight games left to play and a lot to play for, it makes it easier for the Raiders to get back to work with a positive attitude, knowing, look, stop with the silly mistakes. Stop moving on third and short at any time. If you know the count, you shouldn't be committing those type of mistakes. I know it's going to happen every once in a while. You know, but when the Raiders look at the most penalized players in the NFL, and there's three offensive linemen in the top eight, and the majority of their mistakes are illegal procedures, there's no, oh, well, the refs, you know, are calling holding on us and not them. Oh, you know, it's just the refs have it out. Illegal procedure is illegal procedure. You either move or you don't move. And we've seen Alex Leatherwood, the rookie, I think six of his nine penalties this year have been illegal procedures. That's just something that you got to have a better control of. And if they do, collectively, they're going to be in a lot of football games over these last eight games. But getting them to that point, that's been the frustrating part for the Raiders, is because they talk about it, they practice it, they penalize themselves when they commit those types of errors in practice, to the point where practices start becoming really clean. Maybe they're going to have them do push-ups during the game, DeMond. Maybe you have to run laps during the game if you commit a penalty like you do, like happens in practice. Maybe that's what they're going to have to do. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignore and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila in Bajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 a.m. on a Thursday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignore. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignore on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
In my opinion, just getting back to the basics as a team, like just working on the fundamentals, everybody's trying to get their legs back under them and things like that. And just kind of try to come out and revamp ourselves and put our brand of football out there. I think that's kind of the thing that I was echoing the most last game, like just be who we think we are to the team. So that's probably just the biggest thing.
You're hearing a lot about that, or along those lines with the Raiders right now, and I think it's valid. I think it's valid because I think that, you know, if you just look at the last two games, and I know it's frustrating for Raider fans to think of it along these terms, but the Raiders kept shooting themselves in the foot. And I know that that's a part of football, and you have to get over that, and the better teams do. And right now the Raiders can't say that about themselves, that they're one of the better teams, at least these last 2 weeks, because they continue to do it. But it's there. We've seen them play clean football, efficient football, and they've really been able to handle teams as a result, but they have to get back. And I think that's what Josh is talking about and everyone else that we've talked to. You got to get back to that level. And if you do, good things are going to happen, but we're all waiting for to see if they're capable of doing it and if they do or can do it. We're going to go out to the Raider Nation guest line and welcome in our good friend from STN Sports or STN Station Casinos, STN Sports, Jason McCormick, joins us today. How you doing, Jason?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
I was not hearing Jason right there. Can we? Was that on me? Jason, are you there?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, good. I got you. How you doing, my friend?
We're hanging in there. There was another good weekend for the books. We had a good Sunday last weekend, not so much on Saturday, but ready to get back at it with a great slate of games this week.
All right, before we get to pro football, I want to talk about a couple things, and it's in the college ranks right now. I don't know, maybe it's just because the fans are back in the stands for college basketball, but I have been enjoying the start of this college basketball season more than I have in the last 10, let's say. College basketball, for whatever reason, has kind of fallen off a little bit, at least in my eyes, until the tournament. But it just sure seems like it's come out with a bang right now. Are you feeling the same thing?
Yeah, we're seeing handles not normally where we see them. Normally, players are kind of waiting to see what these teams look like and focused on NBA and hockey. But college basketball has come out, and a lot of games being televised. We've got a lot of tournaments here in town, Vegas is kind of becoming the mecca for the early season tournaments as we get to see a lot of good teams here. So you're right in saying it, that college basketball kind of started off with a blast, and with Duke having Krzyzewski's last run here, I think that this is going to continue as we go through these first 2 months of the holidays. I think we're going to see a lot of college basketball and excitement in college basketball.
Speaking of which, a big game tomorrow at 9:30 over at the T-Mobile Arena, and we got UNLV 3-0, I believe, against the University of Michigan. And I saw a little bit of their game against Seton Hall earlier this week. So Michigan coming to Las Vegas to play UNLV, kind of a wake-up call for UNLV or a litmus test for UNLV? Do they have a chance in this game? What's Jason's thoughts on that?
Well, they got to play a little bit better than they did against North Dakota State. They squeaked out a tight one there. And again, we've seen some of the upsets already in college basketball, and these teams, you don't know kind of who they are until they get through these runs. So we'll see if UNLV can keep pace. I think Michigan's going to want to run. Michigan's already been upset once already this year, but we'll see if UNLV can stay with them. They're gonna have to run the floor. They're going to have to be able to keep up with that intensity and maybe see a little bit more running rebel than we've seen these first couple games.
Absolutely. Okay, let's get also to college football. We're kind of getting to that that area of the season, that part of the season where we're all focused on the playoffs and who's going to get there. Is there the ability to bet on that, who's going to actually end up in the four-team playoff?
No, because it's something that's voted on and a committee decides. It's not something we can take bets on. We have to take bets on something that occurs on the field. But I think the biggest game this week when we talk about the playoff is obviously Oregon traveling to Utah. When we talk about these teams that are in the college football playoff talks, we're normally talking about them being big favorites and two touchdown and three touchdown favorites. So it's weird to have the number three team in the country actually going on the road to Utah, and they're over a field goal dog. So kind of a surprise there. And if the handicappers and the bookmakers were making your top teams in the country, I don't think Oregon would find their way into that top three slot. But obviously their big win at Ohio State as a two-touchdown dog has secured that spot, and they'll stay there if they're able to run the table. But this is a tough trip up to Salt Lake.
And interesting about that is there's a very good chance that those two teams could face each other in the Pac-12 championship here at Allegiant Stadium, right?
Yep.
So
yeah, it's again, Oregon kind of controls their own fate. This is where it goes from here. And if Oregon drops here, that again will open the door for the teams on the outskirts. Whether it be maybe Cincinnati or Notre Dame or a Michigan team, there's kind of a round robin going on in the Big Ten between Michigan State, Ohio State, and Michigan, and whoever can kind of come out of that side is going to have to play Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship. And pretty much just secure maybe one spot to get into the playoff.
All right, let's get to the NFL. And Jason, we're talking to Jason McCormick from Station Casinos STN Sports. Jason, last week we talked about the Minnesota Vikings, kind of a Jekyll and Hyde in games, not just throughout the season, but literally in games they've been Jekyll and Hyde, and far too often they've been on the bad side of things at the end of games and not been able to close deals out. But they've been competitive up to that point. It was so frustrating for their fans that they just can't get over the hump. But we talked about them going into Los Angeles to play the Chargers, and I think both of us agreed that is no gimme for the Chargers. And sure enough, the Vikings went into SoFi Stadium and beat them. Now they've got a chance going home against the Green Bay Packers. And I'm going to again say this. I'm not ruling out the Vikings winning that game in Minnesota.
No, there's no way you can, not with the way Dalvin Cook is playing and Justin Jefferson on the back end being able to kind of take the top off the field. They're not intimidated by the Green Bay Packers. Dalvin Cook's had some really good games in recent history. He ran for over 163 yards against them in 2020, and he had a 154-yard rushing game against the Packers in 2019. So if he's able to do those things, we're again going to be in another tight ball game. Aaron Rodgers is 7-6 in his career traveling to Minnesota. So again, he's found some success there, and you're seeing this line basically tell us that this is that toss-up game, with the Packers being under a field goal favorite, a short favorite on the road. And they've got some practice issues there. Rodgers hasn't practiced yet this week. Supposedly he's got a toe issue that's going on. But this is a big game. Obviously, the way Green Bay's been playing, they got a big lead in the division. So it kind of seems like it's a much bigger game for the Vikings if they want to find their way back into this wild card race.
Clearly. And now we go over to the Kansas City, where the Kansas City Chiefs are playing the Dallas Cowboys. I love this game. I love how it sets up and what it might tell us about both teams, really. You know, the Cowboys bounce back after a pathetic performance against the Denver Broncos and waylay the Atlanta Falcons. The Kansas City Chiefs, much to the chagrin of Raider Nation, woke up and beats the Las Vegas Raiders convincingly, especially in that fourth quarter going on that 17-0 run to make it a 41-14 finish. What did that performance say about the Kansas City Chiefs, tell you about the Kansas City Chiefs, especially from in your world?
Well, I mean, they are who we thought they were. We've been waiting for this offense to do what they do. You talked earlier about the Raiders' struggles and the penalties and the turnovers, and really that's what was holding the Chiefs back for several weeks there. Was Mahomes was tied for the league with 10 interceptions. Really hadn't been able to find his guy Kelsey. They've been committing a lot of bad penalties, and they kind of put it all together, much to the chagrin of the Raiders. And we talked about last week they had to find a way to cover Travis Kelsey, and they were unable to do so. And you couldn't be talking about two teams that are playing any better. The probably the best two games of the week last week were the Chiefs and what they did the Raiders, and the way the Cowboys dismantled the Falcons. So you have two teams that probably played the best two games of Week 10, and they're going head to head. Could be a big home win for the Chiefs here as they try to continue this momentum and playing. And the one thing I just don't like about Dallas in this spot is next week's Thanksgiving, and they've got a home Thanksgiving game. And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I know that look ahead, Dallas the week before Thanksgiving, I don't remember those numbers being very good. So maybe just something to check on if the Cowboys are in a tough – I mean, amazing to think that they might be looking past the Kansas City Chiefs. But they've got a home game against our Las Vegas Raiders, who probably are in the same scenario of, are they looking ahead to that short week and that big Thursday Turkey Day game?
I know the Rams have a bye week this week, and it probably comes at a perfect time for them. Knowing Sean McVay, I know he's drilling to the middle of the earth right now, trying to figure out what the hell's going on with his football team these last 2 weeks and how to get it back on track to get back on track. Two bad performances by the Rams, two bad performances, really, by Matthew Stafford, especially to start both of those games and both of these losses, the Tennessee Titans and the San Francisco 49ers on Monday night. What do we know now about the Rams? And still with so much time left in the season, should Ram fans be worried, or are they liable to get it back going here pretty soon?
No, I mean, I think two losses like that in particular, in the way that they, didn't kind of show up at all. And Stafford, it wasn't just a couple bad plays. I mean, he had some wide receivers open even when they were trying to get back in the game that he's just absolutely just missing throws. And so you said it. I think the bye week comes at the absolute right time to assimilate some of the new parts that they've spent and brought into the team. And I think losing Robert Woods in the middle of the week last week didn't help at all. And then the whole circus of OBJ being brought to town. So I think the bye week should set them up well. But again, the NFC West is just it's a tough game every week between if the Niners are able to bounce back like this and find themselves back, and the Cardinals get Murray and Hopkins back, and now Russell Wilson back with Seattle. There's no easy game in that division. So the Rams are going to have a tough road going ahead, but I have a feeling they're going to get things right.
I do too. And you mentioned the Seattle Seahawks. That's exactly where I'm going next. Russell Wilson comes back after 5 weeks off. He looked the part of a guy that's trying to work his way back into things. The offense just doesn't show up for the Seahawks against the Green Bay Packers. Now they return home. I believe they're at home to play the Arizona Cardinals. Kyler Murray looks like he might be headed back, and maybe even this week after missing the last two games with an ankle injury. We're not quite sure if he's going to be on the field or not. If he's not, big break for the Seattle Seahawks to maybe try to get themselves back on track. But even if Kyler is playing his first game back after a couple of misses and not being able to play, I don't know. I'm kind of liking the Seattle Seahawks in this game, Jason.
Yeah, and there's from watching the return of Russell Wilson, who we said last week, he was off for quite some time. Rodgers was out for that 10 days that we kind of expected both those guys to have a little bit of rust in that game. But obviously Seattle didn't put up any points. I think they were inside the red zone twice and had an interception and a no score. But not a lot to like out of the Seahawks from their performance last week, which, in today's NFL, when a team looks worse than they're supposed to, that's the time when you're supposed to play them, because they bounce back with vengeance. And the Cardinals, this is a tough trip up to the Great Northwest, and a Seattle team that's we'll call them a wounded dog, and they get Russell Wilson back. So you're going to get a maximum effort out of this team. And the Cardinals are, kind of falling apart a little bit with missing their guys. We see Edmonds go on to the IR. Watt goes on to the IR. Murray's been out. Hopkins has been out. So they've been missing a lot of the key pieces of their puzzle. So it'll be a tough trip. They actually have a bye week next week, making the Kyler Murray situation even more questionable in the fact that, do you want to bring him out there maybe at, what even if it's at a 90%, when you can give him a whole nother week to heal? So this will be an interesting to see who's on the field. But I said it last week about the Niners, that Monday night game against the Rams was kind of like their Super Bowl. That was their last-ditch effort. If they weren't able to win that game, they were going to have a tough time finding themselves in the playoffs. And I truly believe it's the same thing here for the Seahawks. They can basically end their season with a loss here, as they'll find themselves out of the wild card if they can't pick up a W.
I don't know if we're going to be able to talk to you next week, Jason, with Thanksgiving and all that. But I did want to ask you, moving forward to Thanksgiving, I've covered the NFL for a while now. It's just such a weird week, not just the Thursday games, which I don't know how the heck you guys come up with numbers on that, because, it's kind of a weird deal. But also those games, especially for teams that have to travel, it's a practice day on Thursday, but then it's Thanksgiving, and you just feel it in the air. Every Thanksgiving practice that I've ever covered, you feel Thanksgiving in the air, and it just changes everything. Families in town, there's a lot going on off the field. And a lot of these guys, I think, affects their focus just a little bit. But how does Las Vegas approach Thanksgiving week? And not just those Thursday games, but the ones on Sunday as well.
Well, I tell you, normally Thanksgiving week is a time for bettors to be thankful, because they do really well on Thanksgiving Day. Thanksgiving Day historically is a day the books don't do well. And it probably goes back and starts with the Detroit Lions, because they normally give away so many easy wins on Thanksgiving Day, and everybody bets against them. So betting against the Lions has been a huge Thanksgiving Day tradition for most bettors.
I'm sure.
And they end up cashing their tickets. They're going to be at home against the Bears this week. We had instilled the Bears a 3-point favorite, and there's some craziness going on in Detroit right now with Goff maybe not playing and backup quarterback. So we had to take that one down. But the Cowboys find themselves a 7-point favorite over the Raiders right now. And the Bills are playing at the Saints that Thanksgiving night, and they're a 4.5-point favorite. And an interesting tidbit in that game is I think they're going to be retiring Drew Brees' number down in New Orleans on Thanksgiving night. So some extra emotion to handle down there, as that that New Orleans crowd will be absolutely jacked up for that game, and it'll end up being a big game for them where they sit in the standings. But, you know, from a standpoint of just booking the games and doing what we're supposed to do, we just, you know, put the number up and react to the money that comes in throughout the week. And, you know, both the teams are in the same situation. They're both going through the family issues and the holiday, and we'll just see how the game plays out on Thanksgiving Day. And the one thing that I think becomes interesting is the teams that are kind of in the hunt and out of the hunt as we go into week 12, is normally Thanksgiving is where you start to see that separation of teams that fall out of the playoff hunt and teams that find themselves in it. And so that week tends to be the week that segregates of who's still in this and who might be looking at the season ending versus continuing to play hard.
Very interesting. So in between eating some leftovers on Sunday, keep an eye on who's making the move in the right direction and who's making the move in the wrong direction. Jason McCormick, thanks so much. Real quick, can you tell the fans where to download the or how to download the app so they could have some fun with their turkey sandwiches while watching the games on Sunday?
Yep, just STN Sports, and it's a great time of year. That way you're not having to come down to the book and stand in lines on Thanksgiving Day. You can do it right from the comfort of your home. Just get the STN Sports app. Right now we've got a 10% bonus where you can earn up to $100 for new signups and a free hat if you deposit over $50 or more. Literally come in the book, any station, El Cortez, Wildfire brand property. It takes less than 5 minutes. We'll get you signed up, and you'll be ready to bet all the sports, all the college basketball, and all through the holidays, and get yourself ready for the Christmas and all the basketball going at that time as well.
Absolutely. Jason McCormick, if we don't talk to you, happy Thanksgiving, and enjoy the festivities. Always enjoy talking to you, brother.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
You got it. That's Jason McCormick from STN Sports, Station Casinos. Do what you got to do and have some fun watching the games. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonser and Lincoln Kennedy, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio, 920 AM on a Thursday.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Going out to the Raider Nation listener line, Adam from Florida is on the line. How you doing, Adam?
Good. How are you?
Doing good, man.
This is ring-chasing Raider Adam.
I remember.
As I was telling Damon yesterday, he cut me off and talked to me on the phone, which he reiterated everything I said to him today. Yeah. I heard it. And I just wanted y'all to know that I told him the episode, but it was actually Lincoln that said it.
Oh.
And at the 6-minute mark on the Dan Vantrelli episode on Thursday. And then it went to about 10 minute mark. You let him say what he had to say, and then you said, chasing playoffs. That's what you said.
Yes.
So, like I said, I wasn't trying to put no words in nobody's mouth.
All good, man.
So I also heard Tyrann Mathieu. So I'm also a Florida Gator fan, a diehard Florida Gator fan, and nice. He went to LSU.
That's right.
And so he is real, recognizes real. They called him the Honey Badger because, not because of his hair, but because the old saying about a honey badger is the honey badger don't care, meaning he can fill the hole, lay you out, play deep, blah, blah, blah. You get it. He can do whatever.
Absolutely.
Okay. So now that we got that out of the way, I heard what you had to say about Tyrann Mathieu. This is a Raiders show. We don't, but the thing is if we had Tyrann Mathieu, he'd be God's gift to earth. So that's the thing. That's why I pointed out that I'm a Florida fan, because he went to LSU, which is our rival. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And I appreciate, I appreciate fans that can, like you said, real understands real and recognizes real. I like that because, I'm not one of those haters of, even when I was a fan, and I can't be a fan now, it's just I can't. I'm, I cover the team and so I have to be neutral. I have to be impartial, all of those things. And it's really easy to do that because – you know, the longer you do this, the more you just can't get caught up in all that. However, I'll say this. I'm still a Notre Dame fan. I grew up a Notre Dame football fan, and I'm still a diehard Notre Dame football fan. But I'm not the kind of guy that, you know, I'm going to just hate on the opponent. You know, I respect the opponents, whether it's Navy. Cincinnati came to Notre Dame and beat them, and I tip my cap. And I feel like they have they deserve a chance to be in the playoffs. I just like people anyway. So when it comes to Tyron, I don't understand. And it goes back to college too, where people were downgrading him for his pass coverage skills. Maybe I don't know the game enough. Maybe I don't understand it enough. But all I know is that dude was making plays everywhere you put him on the field. Maybe there was a case to be made where, okay, well, what is he? Is he a safety? Is he a cornerback? To me, he's a football player, and he can do so many different things. And so I never caught into got caught up in he can't cover. I just think that that's a misconception, and maybe it's an
okay,
urban leather.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
Okay, so I heard your statement about the you looked up his grades and all that.
Yeah.
So that brought me to this. All I want to know is, does anyone who watched the game think, now I love Max Crosby, okay? Don't get me wrong. I love Mad Max. He's a baller.
Yeah.
Okay? But Pro Football Focus graded him as the best edge rusher this past week against the Chiefs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they said he had 13 quarterback pressures. Now, I just want to know, did anybody in Raider Nation see him pressure Mahomes 13 times? Because if they did, or if he did, I don't think we get blown out like that.
Well, he was getting pressure, there's no doubt. But on a guy like Mahomes, sometimes pressure works against you, especially if you don't corral him. I mean, you need to fence him in. And he was making plays, as he usually does, getting out of the pocket and making plays. So sometimes getting pressure on a guy like him almost works to his advantage because he likes to throw on the run. He likes to be on the move. So, and sometimes when he does that, it opens up a huge window for him to throw to. If he goes to his right, he's got like all this area that he's looking down, and then that's what he did. He made a nice throw. I forget who the touchdown throw was to, or a big play that he made where he threw it back across the field. So, yeah, I think that he did get pressure on him. I just thought that Patrick Mahomes handle it really well. And as far as the blowout loss, to me, I still go back to the fact that it's a 24-14 game with the Raiders at the 13-yard line of the Chiefs with 3 minutes left in the third quarter. If DeSean Jackson holds on to that football and the Raiders, let's just play it out that they score a touchdown, it's 24-21 at that point. And I think that changes the complexion of the game. It changes how the Raiders defense plays emotionally. And I think it changes some of the things that maybe the Chiefs would have done. And so who knows what would have happened after that. But he fumbled the ball, and I think the Raiders defense went out there with a little bit of a demoralized feeling at that point. It was another error, another, turnover. So it changed it. It was a 41-14 game at the end of the day, but it was a very competitive game, I thought, up until the end of the quarter. So it looks a little bit different because the reality was the game that the Raiders turned up their act could have been much more competitive in. Thanks for the call, Adam. You're in the huddle with Vinny Monsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador, Raider Nation Radio 920 AM on a Thursday. Hey guys, it's Vinny B. Raider Nation in the huddle is all about giving our fans the best opportunities in life. TAT is a new product that allows smokers to enjoy the sensations of smoking with zero tobacco and zero nicotine content. Finally, a cigarette you could feel good about. Similar to Raider Nation rituals of winning championships. TAT offers the Beyond Nicotine experience with its Beyond Tobacco-based material in taste, smell, touch, sight, and sound without nicotine or tobacco. TAT offers a better option to completely remove nicotine intake without compromising the smoking experience. TAT, Beyond Tobacco. Raider Nation, get your free pack of TAT today at TriTAT.com.